Hello, you're listening to the Blackridge Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 1st of November 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Blackridge Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity Beacon Centre. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Blackcountry Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Blackcountry Radio website, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Blackcountry Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. Reading this week, we have myself, Rob, Mina, Craig, Helen, Darren, David, Simon, Angela, Christine, Ed, Liz, Ian, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, the weather, Craig's Black Country joke book, information from Trading Standards about home energy scams, and rounding all that off, we have a feature on Guy Fawkes. But we start with the following message. People who are middle-aged and older who live in Dudley Borough are being invited to attend a free online ageing well event from Dudley Council's public health team. The Change the Way You Age sessions will run on Zoom on Tuesday the 9th and Thursday the 11th of November and will last 1 hour. During the sessions, people will be invited to explore choices that can help them to make early decisions and live the finest life in their older years. Subjects covered will include physical fitness, emotional and financial well-being, carers' support, and future decisions. For more information about the subjects covered on each day and to book a place, people can go online at tiny.cc/changeage. That URL again is tiny.cc/changeage. People who require additional support with digital technology and those with hearing impairments can email helen.o'donnell@dudley.gov.uk, or alternatively can telephone 01384 816 052. Now we have our Guess the Sound quiz. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later, alongside the usual quiz answers. We start, as always then, with some local news, brought to us by Ian, Angela, Ed, Christine, and first up, it's Liz.
Concerns have been raised over the slower uptake of COVID-19 booster vaccines as cases continue to rise across parts of the Black Country. NHS officials say there are no problems with system capacity over the jab, as they called for eligible people to come forward and have it as soon as possible. Despite fears it is slowing down, uptake across the Midlands remains the highest across England, with more than 1 million people receiving their third jab. It comes as infection rates continue to increase in Wolverhampton, Walsall and Dudley, along with parts of Staffordshire, and still remain high elsewhere. Sally Roberts, Chief Nursing Officer for Black Country and West Birmingham Clinical Commissioning Group, said, "The booster programme is currently being rolled out to the same priority groups as the first COVID-19 vaccinations, and we're working hard to ensure those eligible receive their booster jab as soon as possible. Hundreds of people across the Black Country and West Birmingham have already been invited by text, email and letter, encouraging them to book an appointment. We're also offering walk-in booster vaccines at Sadler's Vaccination Centre in Walsall and Tipton Sports Academy in Sandwell, making it easier than ever for people to get their jab with no appointment necessary. If it's been 6 months or more since your second dose, please come forward for your booster as soon as possible to help protect you and your loved ones against this deadly virus and help to slow the spread.
More death threats and malicious messages were reported to police in the Black Country last year than ever before, as pressure grows on social media companies to tackle online abuse. West Midlands Police recorded 1,376 offences of people making threats to kill in the Black Country alone in the year ending March 2021, up more than three quarters on 791 offences the previous year. This is the highest number on record. Yet in more than 8 out of 10 cases recorded by the West Midlands Police, alleged offenders were acquitted and did not receive any kind of punishment. That was either because of problems with evidence, including the victim not supporting further action, no suspect being identified, or prosecution not being deemed to be in the public interest. Only 9% of cases resulted in a suspect being charged or summoned to appear at court. Offences of sending malicious communications have also risen rapidly since its introduction as a criminal offence in 2017-2018. These are cases where someone has sent an email, a social media post, or any other form of communication that is indecent, grossly offensive, threatening, or contains information that is false or believed to be false. Last year, 8,473 of these offences were recorded in the Black Country, a 67% increase on the 5,064 crimes the previous year, and a 241% rise on the 2,482 offences in 2017-2018. 9 in 10 cases recorded by West Midlands Police resulted in the offender escaping justice altogether. A suspect was charged or summoned by court in just 2% of malicious communications cases. These figures come at a time when social media companies face increasing pressure to tackle online abuse following the death of Sir David Ames, Conservative MP for Southend West, which has fueled the debate about the dangers MPs and others can face virtually as well as in person.
Work is almost complete at a new £3 million acute medical unit at Dudley's Russell's Hall Hospital. The Rainbow Unit will open its doors to patients next month. Seriously unwell patients will be treated to help reduce winter pressures on health services. The two-storey building is located next to the emergency department and will provide an assessment unit on the ground floor with 22 spaces and 8 monitored beds, while the first floor has a short-stay ward with 30 beds. The Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust said it was excited to say that the unit will open in early November and will be accepting patients within the next 2 weeks. It said the new facility will replace the unit currently located near the maternity unit and will provide many benefits for patients, including being referred by their GP or brought by ambulance, which will avoid unnecessary attendances at the emergency department. New patients coming into the unit will receive one single assessment by a medical team to avoid being asked the same question on multiple occasions by doctors and nurses providing treatment. Patients referred to the ground floor assessment area will be seen, treated and sent home or referred to the first floor short stay ward if, for example, they need ongoing acute care. If needed, they will be transferred to a specialty ward in the main hospital as an inpatient. When the unit moves, the space left behind will be used as assessment units for patients under the care of the frailty team, cardiology, respiratory, haematology and oncology, and ambulatory emergency care. Same-day emergency care facilities will also be provided on the ground floor.
Rent rises are on the horizon for thousands of tenants in Dudley, with a warning: it is going to hit a lot of people hard. Dudley Council is proposing an increase in rents linked to inflation and in line with government policy, which would mean the average weekly rent would rise in April 2022 by 3.5%. This would mean an average weekly increase per household of £2.79 to £82.50, leading to a yearly increase of £145.08. Labour councillor Steve Watho said he was disappointed to hear about any increase in rent payments for residents already hit by other money issues. He said, "I would say that unfortunately this is going to hit a lot of people hard, such as those who can ill afford to pay extra money with the £20 universal credit being taken off. Many of our tenants are going to face a really difficult time moving forward with the cost of living increases." Dudley Council's Cabinet is set to hear plans to invest more than £50 million across housing services as part of the 2022-23 budget. Councillor Laura Taylor-Childs, Cabinet Member for Housing and Community Services, said the increase had been set below the government set increase of 4.5% and spoke about the council plans. She said, "After what has been another difficult year for so many, including our tenants, I am pleased we're in a position to continue our significant investment in housing services. We can also show our commitment to improving our homes as we move into the new financial year in the spring. To help us invest at the pace we are and to address budget issues moving forward, which have come about as a result of the ongoing impact of the pandemic, along with inflationary pressures and higher demand for our services, it is necessary to bring in a small rent increase."
Controversial plans to cut the speed limit on a ring road from 40 miles an hour to 30 miles an hour could be another obstacle to people visiting a city, a councillor has warned. Wolverhampton Council wants to keep the 30 miles per hour limit on the city's ring road, which was brought in during the pandemic on a trial basis following government advice to promote social distancing measures. A consultation has been launched on the plan, which council chiefs say will cut accidents and be good for the environment by reducing harmful emissions. The change initially sparked criticism that the council wanted to ban cars and motorists, and Conservative councillor Jonathan Yardley has warned that it may add further pressure on the struggling city centre. Wolverhampton city centre needs all the help it can get, and this could be another obstacle that stops people coming here to shop, he said. Drivers are already put off as it is by parking issues and all the bus lanes, which can lead to fines if they accidentally go into the wrong lane. Councillor Steve Evans, Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Environment and Climate Change, said, "We've had a trial in place since June 2020 with the reduced speed limit, and what we've seen is fewer personal injury accidents, which is extremely encouraging in terms of keeping people safer." Visit wolverhampton.gov.uk/troperm for more details on the consultation. It closes on November the 11th.
Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon Update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen. That means one thing, I'm back with all your latest Beacon news. Well, welcome to November. It's certainly starting to feel a bit more like winter now, isn't it? So first this week, we've got a bit of a play on that. So remember, we've got plenty on this November. If you haven't already joined our virtual activities, why not do it now? Our new timetable for this month is now live. All the activities are free and there's lots of different things to try. So whether you're a first timer or a regular attendee, you'll be really sure of a warm welcome from our team. To find out more about any of the activities we offer, whether virtual or face-to-face, why not just give us a call? The number, you should know it by now, is 01902 880 111. Or you can also email Kim Williams via kwilliams@beaconvision.org. That's kwilliams@beaconvision.org. TikTok goes the clock. It certainly does, doesn't it? Did you remember to reset them over the weekend? It was an hour back. I tell you, every single time it catches me out. Anyway, A radio-controlled talking clock or watch will turn back the hour automatically, so you don't need to change anything. And what's more, you don't have to struggle to see what time it is. It's one of the most common issues that people come to our sight loss advisors with, just struggling to see the clock. So if you want to find out more about our talking clocks, why not call our sight loss advisors on 01902 880 111 or email inquiries at beaconvision.org. That's inquiries at beaconvision.org. Now, did you know that it's currently National Trustee Week? So we thought what better time to say thank you to the wonderful trustees who volunteered their time at Beacon to make a difference to people. A third of our board have lived experience of sight loss and their backgrounds are really diverse. Everything from a former nurse to a solicitor. What they all have in common is that they want to make a big difference for someone with sight loss. We'd really, really like to thank them for all their hard work, along with all our other volunteers. What a wonderful job they all do. Lastly, this week, if you're celebrating, we'd like to wish all the Beacon family a very happy Diwali. May the light we celebrate show us the way and diminish the darkness. What a lovely note to finish on, eh? Hopefully, I'll be back to catch up with you all again soon. That's it for now. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the update, Helen. Now we have some more local news. And coming up first, we hear the voice of Angela.
Business leaders have backed plans for Dudley Borough's bid for city status, believing it will attract inward investment. Dudley Council is planning to submit a bid for city status as part of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee celebrations. Councillor Simon Phipps, Cabinet Member for Regeneration and Enterprise, said Dudley Borough is rapidly becoming a major destination for businesses keen to take advantage of £1 billion worth of regeneration and major improvements to transport links and education. City status will only strengthen that position and show that we are a place to invest in and to grow. It will certainly be good for businesses across the borough from Halesowen in the south right up to Sedgley in the north. Bosses at the historic Thomas Dudley Limited Manufacturers in Dudley have also got behind the bid. The family firm has been in business for more than 100 years and thinks the bid could open doors to a more prosperous period for businesses. Boss Martin Dudley is also chairman of the Dudley Business Champions Group, which works closely with Dudley Council to ensure businesses continue to be supported. Martin Dudley, owner of the Thomas Dudley and chairman of the Dudley Business Champions Group, said, "Anything that reinforces Dudley's place on the map has to be welcomed. Businesses have had a really tough 2 years, and city status would, I am sure, lead to a more prosperous future for many in making the borough a more attractive place to live, work and do business." The formal bid will be submitted in December, with the decision expected next year as part of the national celebrations to mark the Queen's Jubilee.
Nearly 6,000 people have taken part in a consultation over a controversial plan that could see part of the region's greenbelt carved up for homes. The Black Country plan sparked a series of protests across the four boroughs when it was announced earlier this year, with residents furious over proposals to develop a number of green sites. Under the draft plan, more than 76,000 homes will be built over the next 20 years, including 7,720 on greenbelt land, while sites will also be developed for employment. Council bosses have revealed that an 8-week consultation into the plan, which was slammed for being inaccessible and poorly promoted, received more than 5,800 responses. Thousands of signatures were submitted as part of 5 separate petitions against the plan, along with 10 group responses. West Midlands Mayor Andy Street has intervened into the row, saying he was convinced that not enough was being done to identify old industrial sites suitable for development. The Mayor has commissioned an ongoing review into underused brownfield sites that is expected to report back before the end of the year. He said, "The review will be taken into account by the four councils as they come forward with their plan. We believe that more can be done on brownfield, so that the take from the greenbelt can be less, if any. One of the key issues is that despite all the sites we are working on at the moment, the assumption in the draft plan about what can be done on brownfield has gone up only by a tiny amount. To me, that doesn't add up, and I am convinced that more can be done on brownfield. If approved, the plan will formally be adopted in 2024.
Coronavirus test centres across the region will be closing earlier despite the health authorities battling rising infection rates. The government said there is currently less demand for evening appointments for PCR walk-in tests, which are sent off to a laboratory. Around 30 community sites, including in the Black Country boroughs, Staffordshire, Wyre Forest and Shropshire, currently close at 8pm, but from November 1st will be closing at 6pm. The move comes at a time when transmission rates are rising, resulting in those taking positive lateral flow test results at home or are being pinged by the COVID NHS app need to visit walk-in facilities for PCR confirmation checks. In addition, health chiefs and MPs are urging more residents to consider taking the COVID-19 jab, both to protect themselves from infection and the NHS from extra pressures over the winter months. Wolverhampton South East MP Pat McFadden criticised the move, which affects all of England. The Labour MP said, "I'm not sure what the justification can be for closing test centres early. One of the problems flagged up in recent weeks has been the mistaken belief that the pandemic is all behind us, when it certainly is not. Infection rates are high compared to neighbouring countries, and there are still significant numbers of people in hospital. As well as the vaccination booster programme, it is in all our interests for a robust testing regime to remain in place, and I cannot see how shorter hours contribute to that."
A West Bromwich Albion fan has lodged an appeal against his conviction and sentence for racially abusing one of his own team's players. Simon Silwood posted a message saying Romain Sawyers should win the Baboon d'Or, a reference to the Ballon d'Or trophy, following his team's 5-0 defeat to Manchester City at the Hawthorns on January the 26th. The 50-year-old of Randall Close Kings Winford was jailed for 8 weeks at Walsall Magistrates Court last month after District Judge Bryony Clark ruled he was not a credible witness and had meant the post to be offensive. During a hearing at Wolverhampton Crown Court on Friday, Silwood's defence barrister Abigail Nixon urged Judge Jonathan Gosling to overturn the conviction, saying Silwood is a simple working-class man and very far from a criminal mastermind. Silwood told the court he was no longer a West Bromwich Albion fan because of these proceedings, and he does not want anything to do with West Brom. The defendant, who was also ordered to pay a £128 victim surcharge and a total of £1,000 in costs and compensation when he was jailed, was charged following an investigation carried out by PC Stuart Ward, who is the UK's first dedicated hate crime officer within a football unit. In a statement issued after Silwood was sentenced for the grossly offensive Facebook post, Sawyers, who is now on loan at Stoke City, encouraged fellow players to report all racial abuse to police.
West Midlands Police recorded its highest ever number of 999 calls in a 24-hour period, with chiefs attributing the surge to people staying in the region instead of going on holiday. The force received a record 2,916 emergency calls on September the 25th, as it continues to struggle with high demand post-pandemic. A report to the force's Strategic Crime Board said the reopening of pubs, clubs and bars was a contributory factor, along with people not travelling abroad for holidays and hitting Birmingham city centre on payday weekends. Demand also increased as a result of the return of students, the report said. Last month, West Midlands Chief Constable Sir David Thompson announced an inquiry into crime reports after it emerged the number of 999 calls received had exceeded calls to the non-emergency 101 line. West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Foster has reiterated his calls for a fair funding package for the force. He said, in just a 24-hour period, the force received nearly 3,000 emergency 999 calls. This highlights the huge pressure West Midlands Police are facing. With record numbers of 999 calls, it is more important than ever that the government listens and puts in place a fair funding package for West Midlands Police. We are still due to be 1,000 officers down on 2010 levels. The government needs to urgently step in and put funding in place to return West Midlands Police's 1,000 missing officers. The Strategic Crime Board report says that tackling serious violence is a priority for the force over the coming year.
With another collection of questions to ponder over, up next we have Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's Bonfire Night themed flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. Up to what year was it still law to have a bonfire each November the 5th? Question 2. Who was the first to host a firework display? Question 3. Where can you go to see Guy Fawkes' lantern? Question 4. In what year was the gunpowder plot? Question 5. How much gunpowder was to be used by Guy Fawkes? And question 6. Which country made the world record firework? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show. But for now, good luck.
Thank you for those questions, Mina. I'll see if they set off any fireworks in my mind. Up next, we have some more local news. And starting first, we hear Christine.
Two joggers who saved a mother and her 8-week-old baby from drowning in a horror incident at a canal in Stourbridge have been awarded top life-saving honours. The incident happened at the canal near Aurora Gardens, Wollaston, on the afternoon of March 17th this year. The mother was pushing her baby, who was strapped into her pushchair, along the canal towpath when she suddenly experienced severe shooting pains as a result of her baby's recent birth by caesarean section. The pain overwhelmed her. She passed out and then fell into the canal with the baby and pushchair. Thankfully, Max Murphy, who lives in Stourbridge, and Susan Westwood of Hagley were out running on the towpath and saw what happened. They ran to the canal edge and Susan jumped into the canal fully clothed. She grabbed the pushchair with the baby still in it and was able to hand it to Max on the bank. Then, together, the pair of them got hold of the mother and dragged her back to the bank and safety. Others who had arrived at the scene had already alerted the emergency services and Max and Susan waited with the mother and baby until they arrived. Both survived the ordeal. Now Susan has been awarded a Royal Humane Society testimonial on parchment and Max is to receive a certificate of commendation from the Society. Praising their actions as he announced the awards at the Society's London headquarters, Andrew Chapman, Secretary of the Society, said, "They were certainly the right people in the right place at the right time and managed to save mother and baby from almost certainly drowning. By luck, they were on the spot when the incident happened and acted instantly. If they had not, the outcome of this could have been very different. They did a wonderful job and richly deserve the awards they are to receive."
The owner of a popular Black Country chip shop hit by a double-decker bus fears she will not be able to reopen until after Christmas. Sophie's Place was wrecked when the bus lost control and crashed into the front of the shop on Castle Street, Dudley, at around 6 a.m. last Wednesday. For 77-year-old Sophie Hinkinbottom, The sudden closure of her business has been hard to take. Coming after the death of her husband, Philip, from COVID-19 in 2020 and a robbery at their home earlier in the year. She said, "I'm still in shock at the moment and very sad about what happened, as everything in the shop is damaged from the range to the windows. We still don't know how much it will cost to repair the damage, and we've had two sets of people in for the insurance, one for the building and the other for the contents of the building. We can't use the building until we can begin repairs, which means we will be likely be closed until after Christmas, which is so hard as it is our living and that of our staff as well. The crash damaged the frontage of the takeaway, with the windows and front door smashed, leaving glass and wooden beams strewn across the floor, as well as damaging the fryer and other cooking equipment. A gas main was also ruptured, leading to the evacuation of people from properties around the shop as a precaution, and the building has been boarded up since the crash." Miss Hinkinbottom said she hadn't heard from National Express, although she had said it was a matter her daughter Stella Minas was dealing with. She did say that despite the sadness and shock, she feels she has been cheered by the response from the community and from her customers.
A healthcare team from Dudley have featured in a new national online learning tool to help people with rheumatoid arthritis manage their disease. The National Rheumatoid Arthritis Society has launched its Smile RA e-learning experience for people who have rheumatoid arthritis and their families. The interactive series of modules also includes an explanation of all the healthcare professionals who may be involved in the patient's care. And the team featured in the online learning tool are from the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust, which runs Russell's Hall Hospital. Dr. Elizabeth Hale, chartered health psychologist with the rheumatology department, said, "We're very proud to have been involved in this. I think it will help patients enormously in understanding a complex condition and the journey they have through a lot of speciality input." The film features 10 members of the Dudley team, including a consultant rheumatologist, clinical nurse specialist, several allied health professionals, a GP with specialist interest, and a pharmacist. It explains who the patient may see and what they can expect from their care team. A spokesman said, "Learning about the disease and how to self-manage with the right support is extremely important when you have a long-term disease. There is a great deal of evidence to show that structured, supported self-management improves long-term outcomes and helps people experience a better quality of life. Rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease, meaning that the symptoms such as pain and inflammation are caused by the immune system attacking the joints. It affects more than 400,000 people in the UK. To register free of charge for the e-learning, visit nras.org.uk/self-management.
A charity set up by former Goodyear workers has donated funds for the refurbishment of a gym at the Wolverhampton and District MS Therapy Centre Limited. The refurbishment of the gym has cost £13,999 and includes the purchase of two exercise bikes and ergonomic chairs to help people suffering from multiple sclerosis. Paula Anderson, the 59-year-old therapy centre manager, said Cyril Barrett, representing the 5/344 TGWU Benevolent Fund branch charity, formed by former Goodyear workers, attended a special presentation and toured the centre along with the Mayor Councillor Greg Brackenbridge. "We are really grateful for this donation, which has made it possible to refurbish the gym. The centre has been running since 1986 and treats people from the local Wolverhampton area. We offer various therapies for people with MS and other conditions, as well as support for patients as well as their families. The exercise bikes will help people maintain muscle tone and stay mobile. We have 200 members and treat up to about 30 people each week with physiotherapy."
Woodcrafters who use a day centre attended a committee meeting at Dudley Council to air their grievances at the potential closure of the building. More than 20 people who use Woodside Day Centre were invited to attend the Health and Adult Social Care Committee meeting held on October 20th to discuss mental health in Dudley's community. Local people who access the services at Woodside Day Centre, including its much-loved woodcrafting facilities, argue the building has purposefully been left in such a derelict state the council will have no choice but to close it. Photographs note a damaged roof, chimney stack and water damage. Robin Smith from Briley Hill and a user of Woodside Day Centre said, "We want to be in a safe, quiet place, not in a cafe where the council are expecting to put us, where it is noisy and all we can do is have a chat and coffee, which is not exactly the same as doing our woodcrafting. The cafe, Queen's Cross, that they want us to move to has nothing to do with mental health services. It has not got the facilities to support us." Ms. Smith, who also works as a glass artist, said she hoped the facility could be brought under the woodcrafters' management as a community asset trust. She added, "It's the only way, realistically, the building can be saved." Speaking after the meeting, Councillor Pete Lowe, who represents Lyon Stourbridge, said, "It is a disgrace that we find ourselves in a situation where residents have not been able to access services since the coronavirus outbreak. The council should be a safety net for these residents, but they are failing them here."
Now, with some information about home energy scams, we hear from Darren, who works at Trading Standards.
"We at Trading Standards deal with many scams, including products and services that claim to improve the energy efficiency of your property. In an age where this is becoming really important to people who are concerned with their day-to-day impact on the environment, becoming a victim of a scam where what's promised turns out to be a lie can end up not only being very costly, but can also leave you with a lot of home improvements that turn out to be worthless. Environmentally friendly products such as solar panels, cavity wall insulation, loft insulation and double glazing can be a legitimate way to reduce your impact on the environment and, in the long term, can even save you money. However, how can you as a consumer tell the difference between a service being provided by a genuine trader as opposed to one being provided by rogues? There's a few questions you need to ask yourself. Were you contacted out of the blue by the company? This is always the biggest red flag. Does the deal sound too good to be true? Are you being promised a grant to pay for the work? Are you under pressure to respond quickly? Is there a surveyor who just happens to be in your area? Is this a one-day-only offer promising a big percentage reduction on the usual price? Are you being told about changes in environmental law that mean you must make changes to your existing product? So fire switches for solar panels, or that fiberglass insulation is now illegal? Are the price details vague? Is the company unwilling or unable to give you a general price up front before they visit? Is the trader out of area? If so, how easy do you think it'll be to get them back if there's a problem? Can you spot any spelling or grammatical mistakes in the leaflet, email or text? Or are you being asked to keep it quiet and not discuss the matter with friends and family? If you've answered yes to any of these, there's a really good chance it's a scam. You need to steer clear and do not allow them to visit. We've seen a recent rise in complaints from homeowners who already have solar panels. Reports have been of a phone call out of the blue telling the resident that the company that has installed their panels has gone bust, but that they, the caller, have taken over the warranty work. However, this usually means that they have bought the customer list and will be contacting everyone on it to try and sell them something that they don't need. Bogus companies have told residents things like, "Your inverter needs changing," when they've got absolutely no evidence that it does. Or, "We've been monitoring your panels. There's no way they can do any such thing." Or that your fire switch replacement is required due to a change in the law. Again, this is untrue. As a result, homeowners have paid for unnecessary and expensive work. Don't be panicked into agreeing to get any work done as a result of a cold call from someone you don't know. Instead, get a second opinion from a trustworthy trader. Then shop around for the best deal for you. If you do sign up, remember you've got a right to 14-day cooling-off period for any contracts agreed at your home. Be aware, though, that this cooling-off period doesn't apply to bespoke goods such as double glazing. So check exactly what, if any, cooling-off period is being offered in those circumstances. This next part is really important. Don't be persuaded to allow the work to start early by signing the paperwork. Always read what you're being asked to sign and don't sign if you're not happy. The cooling-off period is a time for you to do your research or speak to family and friends, and you can cancel without penalty if needs be. If you have signed, you can still cancel until the service is concluded, but you will have to pay reasonable costs up to the point of the cancellation. We know this sounds complicated, but it need not be, so long as you do your research up front. You find a good trader and you're not rushed into making a bad decision. So, before you agree to a visit from a solar panel company, consider the following. What do you actually need solar panels to do? Is it just to provide the electricity you need, or to sell any excess off to the national grid? Get several quotes from different companies. Compare the prices and what's included, and make sure you get a written breakdown of how any claimed energy savings can add up. If the price seems lower than any other quotes, check whether all the services are included. But beware for one-off or on-the-spot discounts, which are examples of pressure selling. Decide what your budget is and stick to it. Remember that this is a long-term investment, and you'll probably not recoup any savings for at least 15 years, maybe more. If finance is offered, shop around for it. You don't have to take the deal that's offered to you by the solar panel company. Be clear about the costings and get the best deal for you. If you use a credit card to pay for part of the price, even if it's just a deposit, you'll have extra protection from your bank in case things go wrong. Look at the length of the warranty being offered. You should expect 25 to 30 years for the solar panels and 5 to 10 years for the inverter, because the inverter is the most likely part to break down. Look at whether they're a member of a trustworthy trade association. The Home Insulation and Energy Systems Quality Assurance Contractors Scheme is the big one. If you're interested in installing any of these energy-efficient products, ask your family and friends if they have any personal recommendations or use a trusted trader scheme. Please remember, though, not all trusted trader schemes carry out the same level of checks, and reviews may not always tell the full story. Take care to double-check the scheme you want to use, and if there is one, use your local Trading Standards approved trader scheme. For advice or to ask for support from Trading Standards, call the Citizens Advice Consumer Helpline on 0808 223 1133. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for that important information, Darren. Up next, we've got our final block of local news, brought to us by Christine, Angela, Ian, Liz, and starting us off, it's Ed.
Everyone concerned about climate change is welcome at an extraordinary event next weekend aimed at calling on people in power to take action. COP26 West Park has been organised as part of the Global Day of Action on Saturday, and we'll see people gather by the bandstand in Wolverhampton's West Park to explore the practical action individuals and groups can take. Councillor Steve Evans, Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for City Environment and Climate Change, and Councillor Jaz Dehar, the chairperson of Interfaith Wolverhampton, will be speaking at the event, and organisers have planned a 1 minute silence for noon for all communities to stand together to tell local, national and international leaders that we want to stop climate change. Carol Hyatt, one of the organisers, said, "At this event, we are asking people to do whatever they can do, no matter how small, to help to keep temperatures low. We are also asking those in power who can make a much bigger action to hurry up and act." Councillor Evans added, "Every single person can help us collectively make a huge difference to climate change in lots of simple ways by making very small changes to our everyday activities and routines." COP26 West Park organisers say they've been overwhelmed and moved by the interest the event has raised. A host of community groups and organisations are planning to take part in the event, which will run from 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. And there will be stalls around the bandstand aimed at actively engaging with Wolverinians about the climate crisis. It is advised to car share, travel by public transport, cycle or walk to attend on the day in order to reduce carbon emissions.
More than 1,000 images from the past century will be displayed at an exhibition celebrating people's memories of growing up in the Black Country. Punks, mods, choir boys and would-be rock stars and models all feature in the celebration of youth culture, which will be held in Dudley next month. The Dudley People's Archive event opens on November the 4th and runs until the end of the month, and we'll see photographs and memories displayed at CoLab in Dudley High Street. The pictures and stories were collected as part of a lockdown project launched last year and show a vibrant glimpse of how people in the town lived, worked, shopped and played. Project curator David O'Coy said the group had also been making use of social media to gather people's reminiscences. Mr. O'Coy said that more than 1,000 images had been submitted to the project and include a range of images from the 1920s to the present day. Mr. O'Coy added, "We've had some great images and stories submitted. I really like some pictures of a group of punks in Dudley Town Centre that Darren Radburn sent in, taken around 1980. The photographic exhibition will be launched from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. on November the 4th, and then will be open 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, Thursdays and Fridays until November the 17th. Anybody wishing to submit their own stories can do so via dudleypeoplesarchive@gmail.com.
A football club's Rough Sleeping event is set to return to the open air to help raise funds and awareness to support homeless and vulnerable people. The Molyneux Sleepout will see hundreds of Wolves fans, local residents and supporters of the Wolves Foundation and Good Shepherd bed down for the night at the Stan Cullis stand on Friday, November the 12th. The event first took place in 2019 and raised £50,000 for the Wolves Foundation, which runs projects to benefit the community, and the Good Shepherd, which provides food and a range of support services for those in need from the local community. It went virtual in 2020 due to COVID-19 restrictions, with people sleeping in their gardens or camping indoors away from their beds, and raising another £13,000 for the two charities. Demi Grundy, Wolves Foundation Communications and Fundraising Manager, spoke about the importance of the event. She said the Molyneux Sleepout has become such an important event over the last couple of years, both with raising funds and also awareness of supporting the homeless and vulnerable from the local community. At the end of the 2019 event, everyone was able to return home to a warm house and refreshments, whereas for a lot of people, we know those sorts of home comforts are not available. Being back at Molyneux, which will hopefully ensure another successful event to support the work of Wolves Foundation and the Good Shepherd, and the sense of community which the Sleepout has previously inspired, is always fantastic to see. Former Wolves captain Carl Henry will be one of many Wolves Foundation ambassadors taking part in the event, alongside Sky Sports TV presenter Johnny Phillips and former Great Britain Paralympic team captain Jack Rutter.
Sir Lenny Henry has achieved much in more than 40 years in the entertainment industry as a comedian, actor, author and TV presenter, as well as being one of the forces behind Comic Relief. He has now added a new string to his bow after writing his first children's book. The Boy with Wings is a story about 12-year-old Tunde, an ordinary kid who suddenly sprouts a pair of wings during a school football match. The book, which is illustrated by artists Keenan Ferrell, is Sir Lenny's first foray into children's books, and he said a lot of it had come from his own experiences reading books as a child. He said, "I was introduced to reading by my Auntie Pearl, who took me to Dudley Library when I was about 8 or 9 and got me signed up for a library card." Sir Lenny was in Birmingham to sign copies of his new book, but his birthplace is always very close to his heart, and he was passionate about the prospects of Dudley becoming a city. He said, "We should have been a city yonks ago, and it's incredibly tardy. So I think everybody who's going to put money towards making Dudley a city should get off their backsides and do it already. We want another Rackhams. We want a Gaudi statue in the middle. We want our own train station with lots of taxis and stuff. And we want our own superheroes to fight crime there, for which I nominate Tunde. If it could happen so that Dudley becomes a city and West Brom got promoted, how cool would that be? The Boy with Wings is out on sale now in hardback and digital forms."
Iconic Black Country landmarks and rural Staffordshire will be showcased during the 2022 Commonwealth Games cycling time trial. Wolverhampton's West Park was already confirmed to host the start and finish of the event on Thursday, August 4th. Full details of the course have now been revealed, with men set to race against the clock over 37 kilometres, while the women will tackle a shorter 29-kilometre route. From the bandstand at West Park, riders will loop around Wolverhampton city centre and out through Sedgley to Dudley, where they will pass by the town's famous zoo and castle. The return route sees the women head back to Wolverhampton through Gospel End, while the men loop through Staffordshire, taking in Himley and Womburn. Both courses finish at the south gate of West Park. The time trial will be among the biggest tests of strength and endurance to feature at the Games, with the event free for the vast majority of spectators. Tickets will only be required for the start and finish in West Park. Councillor Steve Evans, Cabinet Member for City Environment and Climate Change, said, "We are really looking forward to seeing the Commonwealth Games cycling time trial start and finish at Wolverhampton's spectacular West Park." Full course descriptions and course maps are available now at birmingham2022.com, where frequently asked questions for each of the events have also been added to provide local residents and businesses with as much information as possible.
Up now, we hear from Flashback Roger, who has for us some amazing facts all about Bonfire Night.
Hello everyone, I'm here again after avoiding the witch's curse on Halloween and ready for Bonfire Night on Saturday. Now, do you remember the rhyme about Old Guy Fawkes? Remember, remember the 5th of November gunpowder treason and plot? I'm sure some do, but here are a few things about Bonfire Night that I wasn't aware of, so here goes. So I'll light the fuse and stand well back. Now, did you know that? Up until 1959, it was actually illegal not to have a bonfire and burn Guy Fawkes' effigy on November the 5th each year. However, during World War I and World War II, it was illegal to have any bonfires whatsoever during the country's air raid precautions. The first person to host firework display was our King Henry VII in 1486 on the occasion of his wedding, which joined the warring houses of York and Lancaster. Then, much later, Queen Elizabeth I was the first to honour the best firework maker in the country, giving him the title of Firemaster of England. And if you want to see the lantern that was being carried by Guy Fawkes when he was caught, then pop along to the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford, where it's displayed after being given to the city by Robert Hayward. And talk about security. The Houses of Parliament are regularly searched by the Yeomen of the Guard to make sure that there are no more attempts to blow it up. It's an essential tradition that has taken place ever since the infamous gunpowder plot 1605 of Guy Fawkes and Company. There were over 2,500 kilos of gunpowder ready to be exploded under Parliament in that plot. If it had been successful, the whole of Westminster Hall and Westminster Abbey would have been destroyed. Ironically, the cellar beneath Parliament where the gunpowder was stashed was destroyed in a fire in 1834. And the most fireworks ever used was in Norway, when over 540,000 fireworks were used in a display which lasted 1.5 hours. but the prize for the biggest firework goes to Japan, who created a 460-kilo whopper in 2014. It created a huge aerial explosion of many colours, 80 metres in diameter. Well, there you go then. There's more to Bonfire Night than a few sparklers and a skyrocket, but the prices they are these days, I think that's all I might buy. On reflection though, I think I'll stick to looking at the neighbour's party through the window and stay nice and warm indoors with a jacket spud and a hot dog. Any road up, I'm off. So I wish you well, keep warm, keep safe, and look after your pets on Bonfire Night. Bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra!
Now we have our sportsman, Ian, giving you all the latest football news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. A superb first half display helped Wolves to 4 wins in 5 as they held on for victory at home to Everton. A first Wolves goal from Max Kilman and a delightful chip from Raul Jimenez gave the hosts a commanding and deserved half-time lead after an effortlessly brilliant performance. But Everton emerged in the second half with a point to prove, and their high pressing caused Wolves issues. Eventually, with 25 minutes still to play, Alex Iwobi gave the Toffees hope with a low strike. Wolves huffed and puffed, missed some chances of their own, and made life difficult for themselves, but held on to an important lead that puts them 7th in the Premier League. After the game, Bruno Lage said, "The message during the week was very clear. To come and win the game," he said. "We know Everton are a strong opponent. After what we didn't do with the ball against Leeds, today we came again. It was a good performance. We managed the ball well. This team has the quality and understands that we need to try and have more time on the ball than the opponent. We shouldn't be afraid of anything." Wolves next have a trip to the capital as they take on Crystal Palace at 3 p.m. on Saturday. A 54-year winless run at Craven Cottage continued for Albion as Alexander Mitrovic's hat-trick handed promotion rivals Fulham a comfortable win in West London. The second against third clash was being billed as the championship game of the day, but it was to be a story of mistakes and a dubious penalty decision that went against Valerian Ismail's men. They conceded possession in the run-up to the opener as Mitrovic scored from the spot after a highly contentious penalty was awarded. A Robert Snodgrass mistake gifted the former Newcastle man a second, and Albion had seen Darnell Furlong sent off by the time Mitrovic hammered in his third. It ended 10 against 10 as former baggy Tosin Adarabioyo saw red for the hosts on an afternoon where Albion never really looked like taking anything from the game. Speaking after the encounter, Ismail said, "It was individual errors, and it is the same story week in and week out, away from home. As long as you are making mistakes, you are finished. Against Bristol, we won 3-0, but we did make some mistakes, but we were not punished for the ones that we made. Today, the first goal came from a mistake before the penalty. We lost the ball too easily, and I'm not going to speak about the penalty decision because it does not matter. We are 1-0 down and are able to come back into the game, no problem. But we concede the second goal and the situation becomes more difficult for us. We created good chances, but the red card was the final shot for us to lose the game this afternoon." The Baggies next have a midweek encounter at home against Hull before welcoming Middlesbrough to the Hawthorns on Saturday.
Thanks for that sports bulletin, Ian. Well, now we get to hear from Craig, who asked for us a bunch of shorter news items.
Hello, I'm Craig, and I've got for you some Black Country news in brief, an extra helping of local news, 5 short stories which might otherwise have been missed. The iconic Emuel building will have its fossil fuel heating system stripped out as part of the council's plans to drive down its carbon footprint. Dudley Council says this will dramatically cut down on emissions / maintenance costs and save nearly £5,000 a year on energy bills while also freeing up funding for other projects. Wolverhampton MP Jane Stevenson has asked the Prime Minister to support young people in Wolverhampton as it emerged the city has the worst youth unemployment rate in the country. Extra green way slots are still available for Dudley residents needing additional collections this winter. Borough residents can sign up for 2 additional green waste collections in November and December as part of an expansion of the service. Wolverhampton has been voted the worst place to raise a baby in the UK in a national survey. The city finished behind Coventry, London and Nottingham with a score of 2.88 out of 10. In the Playlight Mum survey, one of Wolverhampton's leading campaigners for children's welfare has disagreed with the findings of the poll and says the city is one of the best places in the UK to raise a young family. And finally, a new pizza hut is to open at the Muriel Shopping Centre in December. It will be the first of 40 new sites opened across the UK. The new sites at Muriel will be a Pizza Hut Express offering carry-out or express eating service.
Thank you very much for that, Craig. Now we get to hear from Mina, who, as always, has a weather update for us.
The weather for this week ahead starts off dry and settled, but soon becomes more seasonal. Temperatures look to be hovering around 11 degrees. UV levels are expected to be low throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:19 a.m. for the sunrise and 4:25 p.m. for the sunset. Now we're definitely seeing less of the daytime now. For Friday 5th of November, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 11 degrees, which is not too bad for a bonfire night. On Saturday 6th and Sunday 7th of November, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 11 degrees. Moving on to Monday 8th of November through to Wednesday 10th of November, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 12 degrees. And finally, on Thursday 11th of November, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 10 degrees. So that's your weather forecast for this week. Do wrap up warm if you are going out. But as always, enjoy the weather.
Delving into his joke book once more, we hear from Craig and his Black Country joke book.
Hello, I'm Craig. I'm going to tell you some jokes from my Black Country joke book. A Black Country lad arrives home after fishing on the cut and tells his dad he's caught a whale. Boston, says his dad, where is it? The lad replies, I took it back because it's all rusty and half the spokes are missing. Here's another one for you. A sizzly chap asked his mate in the pub, what's a monsoon? His mate replied, it must be a bloke who's nearly 18. And finally, I've been told crocodiles can go up to 15 feet, but I've never seen one with more than 4. I'm Craig, and that was my Black Country joke book.
Cheers for those, Craig. Up next, we have the quiz answers, brought to us by Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's Bonfire Night themed flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. Up to what year was it still law to have a bonfire each November the 5th? And the answer? 1959. Question 2. Who was the first to host a firework display? And of course, it was King Henry the 7th. Question 3. Where can you go to see Guy Fawkes' lantern? And the answer here is the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford. Question 4. In what year was the gunpowder plot? Of course, it was 1605. Question 5. How much gunpowder was to be used by Guy Fawkes? And the answer here is 2,500 kilos. And finally, question 6. Which country made the world record firework? And it was Japan. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of an open fire. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we hear from David, who has for us an article on the gunpowder plot.
Remember, remember, the 5th of November, gunpowder treason and plot. I see no reason why gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. So says the traditional rhyme we all learned to recite at school. But did you know that the 17th century plot that saw Guy Fawkes and his co-conspirators thwarted in their efforts to blow up Parliament and murder King James I has a local connection? It was at Holbeach House in Wallheath near Dudley where many of the plotters made their last stand. Just down the road from Himley Hall, the fugitives had taken shelter in the mansion after fleeing London following the arrest of 35-year-old Fawkes. As history tells us, Guy Fawkes had been found in a cellar under Westminster guarding 36 barrels of gunpowder, enough to reduce the House of Lords to rubble, where he was ready and waiting to set off the fuse before being arrested. Knowing Fawkes had been captured and that their plot to kill the Protestant king discovered, the plotters went on the run, arriving at Holbeach House where they had been offered a hiding place. But the Sheriff of Worcester and his band of armed men were in hot pursuit of the gang, and their arrival in Wallheath prompted a bloody gunfight to break out on November the 7th, 1605. Robert Catesby, the leader of a group of provincial English Catholics who planned the ill-fated operation, and his co-conspirator Thomas Percy were killed in the shootout. It is said that bullet holes can still be seen in the walls of the Grade 2 listed Jacobean period property, which is now a nursing home, but still retains many original features, such as the oak panelling and fireplaces. Historian John Sparry, who has lived in Wallheath for all of his life, and has also grown up with the stories of this significant event in British history, states, "It's a very important part of our history. We will never really know exactly what happened because we only have the government side of the story due to the instigators being killed or tortured in awful ways. What we do know is that Holbeach House was where there was a showdown and it led to Robert Catesby, age 31, and Thomas Percy, the oldest man in the plot, age 45, both being shot dead with a musket ball. The other plotters that were captured at Holbeach or arrested in the days and months that followed were convicted at their trial and sentenced to be hanged, drawn and quartered. While Fawkes, whose effigies burnt on the bonfire every November, fell to his death from the scaffolding on which he was to be hanged. He had been horribly tortured, but is reported to have held out for 2 days before telling the authorities about his accomplices. Those who had offered the men refuge didn't fare very well either, after their roles were uncovered. Littleton was regarded as a prominent figure in the Catholic community in the Midlands and was the grandson of Sir John Littleton, who purchased the manor of Clent and King's Winford Parish in the mid-16th century. He was eventually arrested for giving assistance to the conspirators and joining them in open rebellion. He was taken in after a month or two on the run going from farm to farm and was eventually executed in Stafford. The house was then taken over for the king, explains Mr. Sparry, who regularly gives talks on the gunpowder plot. Two farmers, Thomas Smart and John Holyhead, both from Rowley Regis, who had helped to shelter two of the runaways, met a gruesome end at High Green, now Queen's Square in Wolverhampton, where they were executed. Parliament met in January 1606 and passed the Thanksgiving Act, which made services and sermons commemorating the plot a regular annual feature on each November the 5th. The tradition grew of marking the day with the ringing of church bells and bonfires. At first, there was a custom of burning effigies of the Pope or the devil. But after the removal of the laws against Catholic worship, it was Fawkes who usually replaced the Pope as the figure burnt on the November 5th bonfires. As it's always his name we hear at the time of year, it is often believed that he was the ringleader of the plotters, but this wasn't the case. Guy Fawkes was not the mastermind behind the plot, he was employed by these gentlemen. In reality, the ringleader was Robert Catesby. In my opinion, Fawkes became the figurehead because he was the one found at Parliament and was taken to be tortured in the Tower of London, says John. These times were awful, so it wouldn't have been very pleasant for him. They had terrible ways of torturing people for information. He wasn't considered a gentleman like some of the other men, so it was easier to blame him. The government encouraged it because they wanted the public to have an enemy, and it took the pressure off the government, says John. Holbeach House and the A449 that runs past it played an important part in this story, so it's important that it's remembered.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra! Oh,